May it please the court.
Certainly.
After the supplemental briefing, there are now three independent theories in which the court can rule in appellant's favor. The first of those is the Article 3, Section 32, bills returned by the governor language. This is subject to argument and briefing, so I'm not going to belabor the point today. But basically, under that provision, a veto session is created by a late veto bill. And a late veto bill is one which is vetoed on or after the fifth day before the end of the session. And a veto session exists for the sole purpose of returning bills returned by considering bills returned by the governor. We submit that only late veto bills can be considered in a veto session. And if a veto session is not constricted to those late veto bills, then if we take that to its logical conclusion, a veto session can consider any veto bill within the term of the sitting governor.
What was the policy reason behind Section 22's language of 5 days before the end of the session?
Judge, I'm not aware of that, and it was actually enacted in 1908 pursuant to a referendum by the people, which voted to, these are various constitutional provisions, yea or nay, would you like to have it in the Constitution? As I read it, it's a safeguard for bills that are vetoed late so that they are not tabled at the end of the session pursuant to Article 3, Section 20A. So it gives them some extra breathing room so that these late veto bills for the fairness of the legislature can be considered without dropping and being tabled and not being able to be considered for the rest of the session. The second argument is also under Article 3, Section 32, and that's the like proceedings requirement. So basically the provision says that if one House takes up a veto bill and overrides the veto, then it's sent to the other House for, quote, like proceedings. And what happened here is the House acted during the regular legislative session and overrode the veto, but the Senate did not. It waited until the veto session to do so. Because the House and the Senate acted in entirely different sessions, the like proceeding requirement wasn't met.
But the like proceeding is not limited in the Constitution by any time period, and there's no temporal restriction on when these like proceedings must take place. Isn't that right?
It simply says like proceeding, but I think if we would interpret the term like proceeding without having a same session or a temporal requirement, we lead to absurd results. And for instance, would it be like proceeding if one House would act during the first session, the first year of a General Assembly, and the other House acts in the second year of General Assembly? What if the House acts, one House acts in an entirely different General Assembly than the other? Or what if the House would act in the first year of a sitting governor's term and the Senate would act in the eighth year of that sitting governor's term? So I think for purposes of interpreting the statute, we need to have a like proceeding temporal requirement, otherwise we reach.
Is there any precedent to the idea that if a bill is not passed during a session, it dies?
That would be Article 3, Section 20A, which tables bills at the end of the regular legislative session.
What does it mean? Table doesn't mean it's dead. It means it's tabled. It means it could be brought up again.
If it could be brought up again, as I read Section 20A, it tables the bill at the end of the session. And the Atterbury case says that the Constitution governs when the legislature can act. It's a finite window. And the end of the regular legislative session is the end of the line. If, for instance, if at a different session they would try to untable the bills, I suppose that's a different case. But here what happened, at the end of the regular legislative session, House Bill 150 was tabled, and therefore couldn't be brought up in the veto session.
Of course, there's a question of whether it was tabled. Why was it tabled?
It was tabled because it was on the calendar. I guess you need two things.
Well, there's a disagreement on that. Can you address that?
There is, Judge. So essentially, to fall under Article 3, Section 20A, which is the tabling provision, you need two things. The first thing is a bill. I don't think there's any dispute that House Bill 150 is a bill, despite the fact that it was vetoed by the governor. And there's nothing in 20A that would exempt a vetoed bill from consideration under the tabling provision. And the other thing is remain on the calendar. The wrinkle here is that a couple days before the regular legislative session, House Bill 150 appeared on the Senate's formal calendar, but the last day of session, which is May 15th, it did not. But we submit that it still remained on the calendar for purposes of this constitutional provision. There's actually support for this in the veto session provision, Article 3, Section 32, which says a bill that's vetoed by the governor shall stand as reconsidered and be pending. And we submit that it's difficult to think of a bill which stands as reconsidered and be pending and not be on the calendar for purposes of
Article 3. Does it make a difference if the House overturned the veto and the Senate did not act? If the House did not act at all, would that make a difference?
It would not in this case because House Bill 150 was not subject to a late veto. So therefore, it couldn't be considered in the veto session at all. Let's say, for instance, House Bill 150 was subject to a late veto. Then it would have an exception to the tabling provision, Section 32, for it to be considered during the veto session. But even if it was subject to a late veto, we still have the problem here of like proceedings, because we have the House acting in the regular session and the Senate acting during the veto session. So like proceedings, if Article 3, Section 32 was not met and we still have a constitutional problem.
Do you have any historical context for the creation of the veto session to deal with late vetoes as the purpose of the veto sessions?
So veto sessions? In the beginning, so to speak, there was no tabling provision. And there was no veto session either. And so it basically said the legislature can reconsider bills returned by the governor at its convenience.
But going back to 20A and your analysis of all bills in either house remaining on the calendar after 6 p.m. of this past year, which was May 15th, if you go to the Senate Journal, there is no reflection that House Bill 150 is pending.
That's correct, but we would submit that on the calendar for purposes of Section 20A mean a bill that was considered during the session but didn't make it to the end of the line and actually become law.
But the Journal is the official record of the Senate, and if House Bill 150 doesn't appear anywhere in the Journal, regardless of the name calendar preceding it, but it's not reflected anywhere in the Journal, how can it be pending to be tabled?
I think the question I would have would be, if it wasn't on the calendar, how did the Senate bring it up in the veto session then? Did it simply spring out of thin air? And I mean, I would submit that if the legislature can take a ministerial act and, you know, take a pen and cross the bill off the calendar or delete it on the computer calendar or anything like that, that renders the tabling provision meaningless. And it can't be presumed that the people of Missouri would have enacted a tabling provision which can be so easily gamed by especially a ministerial act of the legislature. So at the end of the regular legislative session.
So your interpretation of tabled means it's laid on the table and it's actually dead at that point.
Unless there was some other action to somehow revive the bill, table bill is, I would submit, is inactive. Here it's undisputed that there was never any vote by the House or the Senate in the veto session or any other time to untable House Bill 150. So, and again, so once House Bill 150 was tabled, there was really nothing else that could be done to untable it. It was tabled at the end of the regular legislative session. That's the window for it to act under the Constitution in the Atterbury case. And there are some Senate rules and House rules to allow for untabling of bills in certain circumstances, but the window basically is shut because that was the end of the regular legislative session. I suppose the Senate could have called for a special session, but again, that wouldn't do the trick here because that wouldn't be reconsidering the vetoed House Bill 150. It would be reconsidering considering a new bill which potentially would have the same provisions, but that's not what happened here. And there's no vote pursuant to the House or Senate rules to untable the bill either. So, I mean, even if House Bill 150 was not tabled, it still was enacted unconstitutionally for two reasons. One, under Article 32, or Article 3, Section 32, rather, it wasn't a late veto, couldn't be considered during the veto session. And secondly, we have the like proceedings problem. Even if their tabling is not an issue, where the House acted in an entirely different legislative session than the Senate. And I've got a couple minutes left, but if there are no further questions, you can hear from me on rebuttal.
Thank you.
May it please the Court, Your Honor, Jeremiah Morgan on behalf of the state. The issue remains one of constitutional interpretation of the plenary power of the General Assembly. Can the Missouri Senate override a veto which was returned during the regular session at a veto session when the Constitution does not expressly or clearly prohibit them from doing so? Yes, they can. And before I get to sort of the questions that this court posed, I want to again return to the concepts that underlie what the first argument we had, and that is the legislature has plenty of power to act and take legislative action. Certainly, they have to be in legislative session, but they have plenary power to act. And any restriction on that is to be strictly construed in favor of the legislature. So if there's any doubt, in fact, if there's any two ways to read something, then it should be read in favor of the legislature and legislative action.
Now, your opponent argues that your argument, if you take it to its extreme, means that you can consider these bills in successive sessions.
No, not true. That's not true, Your Honor.
They actually argued that last time, that you could consider it the next session.
In the next, the same, or I'm sorry, in the, next, in the same General Assembly.
Yeah.
I apologize.
Well, she's coming with both, right? I don't know what you meant.
Let's go for both.
Okay, yeah, so certainly they can within the same General Assembly. That's true.
First
and second regular sessions.
I used to expressly say that. They took that out and replaced it with this language we're talking about today. Shouldn't we read something into the fact that they replaced that earlier language saying you can consider it in the next session?
Yes.
And that's no longer there.
So I think there's really two ways to look at what Section 20A did or how it applies. The first one is it doesn't apply at all to bills returned by the governor. That's one way to read that. The other one is to say, in which they've conceded, that Section 32 is an exception to to Section 20A. Which is also an equally plausible way to read it, and results in the very same arguments that we made the first time, and that is, if that's true, then the language of Section 32 controls, and that is, bills returned by the governor, not the bill, not a bill, not such bill, but bills returned by the governor, not limited to the late veto bills that the plaintiffs have suggested here. But let me go back to the first one. A plausible reading is that Section 20A doesn't apply to bills returned by the governor. And this is a plausible argument. One, of course, it's worth noting, and the plaintiffs talked about these bills being passed by the people. I think all of these were joint resolutions. 20A is a Senate joint resolution that was passed in 1960. It's unlikely that the Senate would have put that in there knowing that they have already Section 32 of the Constitution that said they can consider bills returned by the governor at their convenience. So that provision, Section 32, was in there when this tabling provision was added by the Senate by joint resolution and then submitted to the people for a vote. It's unlikely the Senate put that in there, 20A, at the same time recognizing they could consider bills returned by the governor at their convenience.
So where does it say at their convenience?
In Section 32, in Section 32 in 1960. Now, this is historical. I apologize, Your Honor. This is historical. In 1960, when the tabling provision of 20A was added, Section 32 said that they could consider at their convenience.
You're saying in 1960 they must not have meant it to apply to bills that came back because at their convenience was still in the Constitution and they wouldn't have been purposely limiting their constitutional authority by rule.
Given that the Senate is the one that submitted it to the voters. And that remained the case from 1960. So when that was added, that tabling provision in 20A was added in by the Senate and then voted on by the people, that being able to act at their convenience to override a veto remained the law until 1970. And then we get into all of the changes that happened in 1970 and 72.
But we can't just treat them like, they got rid of it at your convenience.
Yes.
And at first they said all bills could be that were returned could be considered in the next year, I think.
Yeah,
And then they got rid of that and said only late filed bills.
No, they didn't say only late filed bills. They
said late filed bills can. They didn't say only.
That's right. Late filed bills can give rise to a veto session, and they can be considered in that veto session. But I think it's interesting instructed the progression. In 1970, depending upon odd or even years, it was carried forward to the very next year. So there's no some sort of esoteric restriction on the General Assembly that they can't carry something forward to the next year.
But that was prior to the change saying
yes.
Late filed bill can be considered, makes an automatic veto session, and they added that in. They got rid of the at your convenience. They got rid of any reference to the next section. Why doesn't that suggest that that was their intent to more put in procedural restrictions? On
Once again, these were joint resolutions, and they were not, Section 32 was not was never intended to be a limitation on the General Assembly's ability to consider the override, to consider override of a veto. It was never considered a limitation, and that language comes through in the historical development too, and that is in even number years, it said it created a veto session originally, and then in odd number near years, and the language that it used, again, we're back to the argument that we had last time, and that is it used the bill, right, for one part, and then those that would be carried over, that could be carried over, it said bills returned by the governor. So it used specific language
and
to that.
So again, you would, if there was no late returned veto, then you would say they could not call a veto session, but you could, they could have had this vote the next year.
In the next session.
In the next
That's
session.
Correct. That's correct.
And where do you get that when, given that the language that explicitly allowed that is now gone?
Well, this is where we get it, and that is there's no restriction in the Constitution.
Have we ever had a statute that was carried over from one, that was voted on by one House and carried over to the next session for the next House to vote on it?
There certainly were. I mean, recently, now with the division of the division of sessions, that's not the case, or it's not often the case. But certainly, and here's a couple of
when has it been the case?
Well, in 1970, when we went to every year sessions as opposed to a 2-year session with no adjournment or no break in there, I don't know the answer to that in terms of, you know, are there specific bills that carried over? But certainly the Constitution permitted a bill to be carried forward expressly in Section 32.
But when they got rid of that, you're saying the silence therefore should mean they still have that authority in effect?
Yes, it does.
Even though they used to expressly have it and then took it out.
Well, and they did, the amendment they made, the amendment they made was not to further restrict. But instead, when Section 32, when they made those changes, it was so they provided a veto session after every session of the General Assembly.
That's because before that, there were no sessions. It was a 2-year session.
It was just a long, big, long session.
Right.
That's right.
So you talk about carrying something forward, but it's just carrying over past New Year's Day. It's not carrying it through a new session because there weren't new sessions.
You're quite right, Your Honor. That's exactly right. And that is still the case. The fact that it's broken up into two sessions doesn't mean it's not the same General Assembly. And the same General Assembly can consider bills. Now, there are rules, of course, Senate Rule 75 and House Rule 101, both of which talk about what happens to bills at the end of a session that would potentially control. But so one way to look at this is that Section 32 is, my apologies, well, one way to look at this is bills returned by the governor are not subject to 20A because when they passed those, they didn't contemplate that they would be taking away that authority, or that Section 32 is an exception to that. And it says, because if their argument is true, if we carry that to its conclusion, then every bill even returned in that late period, right, in those last 5 to 6 days, are also tabled, right? They
Except
would be
that it expressly says right. Those can be considered in veto
right.
sessions.
Well, that's right. It expressly says not those, not late. It says bills returned by the governor. It doesn't limit it to late filed bills.
But your argument again brings us down, and I know we talked about it in the last argument.
Yeah.
That would mean that whether or not you get to have the second house vote depends on if the governor happens to veto another bill or not later on, unless we agree with you that there's an unwritten authority to bring it to the second year of the same General Assembly.
Well, and the plaintiffs here have conceded, and I think it's true. Certainly the General Assembly could call a special session to consider bills returned by the governor.
But their point is they didn't.
No, they didn't. Yeah. That's right. That's right.
Can you answer an earlier question by opposing counsel? If it was not pending because it was not in the journal and not on the calendar, then how did it exist to be brought up at the veto session? It had to be someplace.
Well, it was read into the veto session. I read that the first time
around.
You
couldn't just take it out of nowhere. It had to be someplace.
Yeah, it was delivered by the House to the Senate.
And where was it during that interim time over the summer? If it wasn't on the journal on the calendar, how could it get taken up?
I think the actual bill was in the possession of the House.
And no, that's fine. Yeah, I understand and legally where was it.
Right. I would say on that point, it's actually, I think this is a very interesting point as well, and that is, in a sense, the bills returned by the governor are not required to be on the calendar. They are, when they are returned from the governor, they stand as reconsidered and pending. They are not
required. So they're pending in some way without being on the journal or calendar.
They don't have to be on the calendar.
Do they have to be in a journal?
Yeah, they have to be entered in the journal. That's okay. Right. That is a requirement in the Constitution.
But they weren't in the journal.
No, they were. Right. They were
at one point.
But
yeah,
they weren't in the journal on the last day of session. There was no reflection that it was ever in the Senate. So you're saying that it was never delivered to the Senate, but it stayed in the House.
No, it was delivered to the Senate, but because of they had a filibuster going on, they weren't able to get to it.
It have to physically be entered, or is it just automatically in the journal? By being delivered to them. Otherwise, the ministerial error could preclude consideration of important legislation.
Right. Well, the Constitution merely says it has to be has to be read into the journal.
And it was, yes.
It was read into the journal.
On an earlier day.
Yeah.
Well, where it was read into the House journal.
It was read in the...
It was never read into the Senate journal until the veto session.
Until the veto session. Right. That's right. And that's...
So how is that a like proceeding? It was read into the House journal in the regular session.
Because
more like proceedings held in the Senate.
Mm-hmm. I agree, and this goes to the second question the court asked, and I would say attach on to what Judge Russell said, and that is there is no provision in the Constitution that says like proceedings means the same session, or there's some sort of temporal restriction on that. There's no qualification as to what like proceedings are, and so the only way to interpret that is to look at what the Constitution says, what are the proceedings in there, and whatever the dictionary says. The dictionary, of course, says what we might think it says, and that is something of similar nature, or to accomplish those things. But if we look at the provisions of the Constitution in Section 32, what are the like proceedings? The like proceedings are, it shall stand as reconsidered. Objections of the governor shall be entered upon the journal. That's the language, entered upon the journal. They shall proceed with the question, and it was entered in the journal. Shall proceed to the question pending, which is, shall the bill be passed, the objections of the governor notwithstanding, which was done. It shall be voted on by yeas and nays, which was done. It shall be voted two-thirds majority, which was also done.
When did it stand reconsidered in the Senate?
As soon as it was delivered from the House, it stood as reconsidered.
Okay. Where is that in the Constitution?
In Section 32, it says once passed by the House that it's returned to, then it's delivered to, I'll get the...
And what date was it delivered?
Well, I don't know the answer to that one, actually.
Go ahead, if you could read that language, yeah.
Yeah. No, it says...
the objections of the governor shall be...
Yeah, and send the bill with the objections of the governor to the other House, in which like proceedings shall be had in relation thereto.
And the first one of those is that it stands considered.
Yeah, the vote upon... Well, it says... Yeah.
So why wasn't it standing... reconsidered in the Senate the day it passed out of the House?
It was.
So it was standing as reconsidered in the Senate when the session ended?
Yes.
And
it wasn't on the calendar. It wasn't required to be on the calendar, but it stood as reconsidered in the Senate.
And what does stand as reconsidered mean?
It means the Senate doesn't have to take any other legislative action to consider it, to vote on it. At that point, there's nothing...
But how are you not on the calendar if the Senate can vote on it?
It's not,
they don't mean physically. What if someone failed to physically enter it on a piece of paper? Does that mean it's not in the calendar and can't be considered? Or does it mean it's before the Senate for consideration? It's their calendar. It's their things that they're allowed to...
The Constitution doesn't define what calendar is.
But we're asking your help in defining it because that's important for these people.
Yeah, well, and to that point, my suggestion to you is either of two things, and that is, one, it is not on the calendar because it's not required to be on the calendar. Or two, Section 32 is an exception to that. And we've argued about whether or not bills returned by the governor All of them can be considered during the veto session, but that's, they have conceded that it is an exception to it. And so if it is an exception for late bills, which they would expressly agree, those that are returned in those last 5-6 days, that they, even though notwithstanding that tabling provision, can be considered during the veto session, it would be equally true of the express language, the plain language of the statute, of the Constitution, which says bills returned by the governor, not those bills, not the bill, not late bills, not such bills that used to be in the provisions but are not. Again, we return to, and this is sort of the Florida Supreme Court considered similar issues in the Childs decision, and they had an opportunity, the legislature in that case had the opportunity to override a veto during a session. They had that opportunity. They decided not to. They carried over into the next one. And the court there said, that's perfectly fine. There is no specific, clear, and express restriction on the legislature from doing that. And when that's the case, then we defer to the plenary power of the legislature. Here, they passed the law. There's no question that they passed the law two-thirds in the House and two-thirds in the Senate. And I'm out of time.
You are. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Morgan, it's a very difficult argument to clarify, and I appreciate your effort.
Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor.
I'd like to address a couple of the arguments raised by Mr. Morgan. First of all, we believe that the historical enactment of these various constitutional provisions shows that, in fact, bills vetoed by the governor are subject to tabling. So initially, there was no tabling, there was no veto session. Bills were vetoed by the governor could be considered at the legislature's convenience. In 1960, we have tabling put in the Constitution, Article 3, Section 20A. At this point, every bill vetoed by the governor was then subject to tabling at the end of session. In 1970 and 72, then, we have the veto session put in. At this point, there is the distinction between even and odd-yeared bills. So bills subject to a late veto in 70 and 72 in odd-numbered years would be rolled over to the next year. Even-numbered years would be considered in a veto session. In 88, we have the removes the distinction between odd and even-numbered years. We've got a veto session every year. So we submit that the tabling language, because it predated the veto session. The veto session is a specific exception to the tabling requirement only with regard to those late veto bills to give the legislature a chance to consider those bills before they're tabled. I think it's also telling that respondents haven't pointed to a single example of a non-late vetoed bill, aside from this instant House Bill 150, which was considered during a veto session. Which we submit amounts to a legislative interpretation in favor of the appellant's position.
But this is a question of first impression. You grant that?
It is, Judge. And with regard to that as well, the Florida case, the Childs matter, we believe that's not on point.
But these are all constitutional amendments about the delicate balance between the executive branch and the legislative branch. Originally, there was a tremendous amount of power in the It still is, and the governor to be able to veto and pocket veto, and so there was a decision by the people to amend the Constitution to allow for the veto sessions.
That's correct, and we submit that our reading of this, that all veto bills are tabled at the end of session except for those veto bills subject to late veto, which are then considered in a veto session, that's consistent with the Constitution as read as a whole, which has a number of restrictions on both the governor and the legislature in order to have the fair and orderly enactment of legislation, which is not subject to gamesmanship or other sorts of hide-the-ball tactics. Again, I just wanted to make one quick point on the Childs case. We don't believe that case is relevant. The constitutional provision there is significantly different. All that required, it didn't require, like the Missouri Constitution, that a veto bill be reconsidered. All it required, I believe the language was, that the language be entered on the journal. And it was a ministerial act which was done in that case. So unlike here, Article 3, Section 32 says the bill has to be stand as reconsidered. We submit that case is on point. Thank you very much.
Thank you both for a well-argued case. Case will be submitted.